welcome back to the program. According to a recent poll, for the first time, a majority of Americans favor same-sex marriage. Yesterday's decision by Judge Vaughn Walker, while far from the final word, is yet another step in a ladder climbing inexorably towards the acceptance of marriage equality. Iowa, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, Washington, D.C., and Vermont are all moving in this direction. In light of yesterday's ruling, it seems an ideal time to look at the institution itself of same-sex marriage, and in those nations and places where it has been the law for some time. In doing so, perhaps we can better understand its rationale, its benefits, and assuage some of the legitimate fear surrounding this issue. We're going to talk about all of this today with my guest, William Eskridge. He's the John A. Graver Professor of Jurisprudence at Yale Law School. He's the author of numerous articles and books, including The Case for Same-Sex Marriage. It is my pleasure to have him here to talk about his book, Gay Marriage, For Better or For Worse, just published, republished by Oxford University Press. Bill Eskridge, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here. The idea of same-sex marriage has been around, obviously, for a long time. And as you point out in the book, it's been there. It's been the law in Denmark since 1989, in Norway since 1993, in Sweden since 1995. Talk a little bit about that history.
Well, the book that Darren Spadali and I did, Gay Marriage for Better or for Worse, does survey these Scandinavian institutions that were established in the late 80s and the early 90s. We now have 20 years' worth of data and human experience with what they call registered partnerships, which are the functional equivalent to same-sex marriages. And in those countries, starting with Denmark, all of the same arguments were raised against the institution when the parliament was considering it in the late 80s, that this would destroy marriage, that it was simply a politically correct publicity stunt and is not a serious effort on the part of the lesbian and gay community. And the biggest surprise to opponents probably is that once Denmark started registering partners, recognizing their relationships, raising children, and so forth, there was not really much change in Danish society. Lesbian and gay couples were able to celebrate their unions, raise children, participate in society as openly lesbian and gay couples with all of the same legal rights and benefits of marriage. And the institution of marriage not only did not collapse, but in Denmark it made a huge comeback after 1989, after about two decades of precipitous decline. Now, Darren Spadali and I do not argue that same-sex marriage caused the comeback, but it certainly refutes the arguments of naysayers who believe that same-sex unions will somehow denigrate the institution of marriage and cause people to flee from it. Quite the opposite. It is a serious civil institution that allows lesbian and gay couples to formalize their relationships in the same ways that straight couples have long been able to do.
With the increase in marriage in Denmark, is there any causal relationship that's been found at all between gay marriage and the increase in marriage in general in Denmark?
Well, we certainly find a correlation, but we don't claim there's been a cause-effect relationship. Usually, and this is something the American debate needs to take very seriously, the future of an institution like marriage has very little to do with what couples are allowed to enter it. So, for example, hysterical racists claim in the 1960s that allowing different race couples to enter the institution of marriage would destroy the institution and produce all sorts of horrible effects for America. And as we've seen in the last 40 years, that argument is simple nonsense. It was never based upon any factual information. And the same is true of the arguments that naysayers make against same-sex marriage. So we do not claim that there's a causal link. What we claim is the causal link is that lesbian and gay couples get to formalize their relationships that benefits not only them, but also the children that they're raising in those relationships and society as a whole. The main causal evidence that we present is that in the Scandinavian countries, the rates of sexually transmitted diseases did decline, and a causal link is tentatively established between the recognition of same-sex unions and the decline of sexually transmitted diseases.
And what kind of opposition was there to same-sex marriage in Denmark, Norway, and Sweden when the ideas were first put forth?
Much of the opposition was religious in nature, that this was a violation of some kind of natural law notion of what marriage must be. And here it should be noted, as it was in Denmark and Norway and Sweden, that civil marriage is a different institution from religious marriage. In those countries, and certainly in the United States, religious groups such as the Roman Catholic Church and the Church of Latter-day Saints are fully entitled to recognize or not recognize as marriages those unions that violate their faith. But civil marriage is marriage for all members of society, and it should not leave out lesbian and gay adults who want to formalize the relationships. That was one argument. A second argument was the defense of marriage argument, which was popularized in this country by President William Clinton and the Defense of Marriage Act that he signed and supported. And that argument was that somehow same-sex marriage would undermine the institution and people would flee away from it. And that argument is decisively falsified by the evidence in our book. Those were the two main arguments. Other arguments were that same-sex unions would not be a good situs for raising children because they would be confused in their gender roles if they did not have one man and one woman as their parents. And the evidence on that has never been very strong. It's neither been falsified nor ever established by an empirical study.
When these debates took place in the Scandinavian countries, was it couched, as it often is here, in the context of it being a battle for civil rights?
Not as much. In the Scandinavian countries, the registered partnership statutes came through the legislatures and not through the courts. So the legislatures treated the issue as one that was worthy of policy study. And commissions were appointed. The commissions found that there were a number of same-sex couples who would benefit from the institution. They were raising children, and the children would benefit. Society on the whole, they thought, would benefit particularly, and this was a prescient moment, particularly the commissions felt that the battle against AIDS transmission and other sexually transmitted diseases would be abetted by recognizing committed relationships, and that was an important public policy reason in favor of recognizing these unions.
And to what extent did that argument help drive the debate, and was it unique to that particular moment in time, given the state of the AIDS epidemic at that point?
I don't think that argument was decisive. It was a supporting argument. I think the main argument was, and this is a kind of civil rights argument in the United States, but it was treated in a very non-emotional way in Scandinavia. And that is the argument that the institution of marriage serves many civil, societal, social functions. It recognizes relationships that the state should be recognizing, encouraging people to stay together, particularly if they're raising children. It provides decision-making rules that are very useful for these couples. Those arguments were the critical arguments, and the contention was made that same-sex couples would benefit from this legal recognition in the very same ways that different-sex couples long had. And that was the argument that was persuasive. In the United States, we would call that a civil rights argument.
Mm-hmm.
In Scandinavia, they would just call it normal civility.
Does the debate, or can the debate in Scandinavia, teach us anything about the incremental nature of the way that we are proceeding in this debate and in this process here in the U.S.?
Well, what Darren Spadali and I argue in the book, and I think this has been richly borne out by the examples that you listed at the start of your program, is that same-sex marriage comes on little cat's feet. It does not leap out of the blue. It requires a great deal of preparation because the fact of the matter is that in the West, marriage has traditionally been one man and one woman. And there's a lot of understandable reluctance on the part of many Americans as well as many Europeans at changing the institution in a significant definitional way. And what we argue in the book is the experience in Europe, particularly Scandinavia, And we're thinking also about the Netherlands and Spain and some of the other countries in Europe that are now recognizing these relationships, is that for lesbian and gay people generally, it's very important for a society to work through a series of steps. Step number one is that lesbian and gay people are not criminals. And remember, in the United States, lesbian and gay people were criminals before 2003 in Texas and many other jurisdictions. So we have taken that step much later than the European jurisdictions have. Secondly, once that step has been taken, which I think ought to be easy, though it frequently was not, then the recognition needs to be made by a society that lesbian and gay people are actually pretty normal, that lesbian and gay citizens are productive workers, good neighbors, nice people, very worthy citizens whose sexual orientation ought not, as a normative matter, to be the basis of any kind of discrimination against them in the workplace, in public accommodations, in hotels, as school teachers, and so on. And again, the United States has been very slow on that score. There is no civil rights law at the national level protecting against sexual orientation discrimination, though a number of states have such laws, including all of the states that have recognized same-sex marriages. In Europe, that step was taken earlier, and that helped prepare the way in Denmark, Norway, Sweden, the Netherlands, for either registered partnerships or same-sex marriage itself. And then the final step is that now that gay people are no longer outlaws and are recognized as normal, tolerable citizens, the recognition needs to be made to this social reality, and that is that lesbian and gay people do form relationships. They form committed relationships. They raise children. They have families. And once this recognition becomes socially acceptable and well known, then people, as a natural matter, will accept and support civil unions, registered partnership, what we often call domestic partnership, and ultimately same-sex marriage. And the argument there is these citizens and these couples and the children that they are raising are entitled to the same legal recognition and the same advantages and disadvantages that everybody else gets from the state. It's a matter of simple equality. It need not be a matter for hysterical debate, though it often does devolve into that.
One of the things that we're seeing in terms of this sea change that I alluded to earlier is that the real change is coming at the generational level, and that's been the heart of some of the change in attitude that we've seen here in the U.S. Talk about whether that same aspect of generational change was a major part of the movement in these other countries.
In all of the Western countries that have recognized same-sex marriage or registered partnerships, the support for them has come disproportionately from citizens under the age of 40. And opposition has come disproportionately from citizens over the age of 65. We saw that very dramatically in the California vote on same-sex marriage back in November of 2008. And that's the pattern. The reason for that is not that people over 65 are prejudiced or bigoted necessarily, though many of them are, but instead what that reflects is that people under the age of 40 are much more likely to have lesbian and gay relatives that they know about and that they grew up knowing about, gay or lesbian teachers, other role models, public figures, major tennis players, and they are also much more likely to know lesbian and gay parents, committed couples, and people who are presenting themselves, sometimes for decades, as families. So for them, the factual matter is that gay families are a social fact, that they are worthy, they're admirable. Lesbians are not only raising children, they're raising children successfully. Sometimes straight couples can learn a lot from lesbian couples that are raising children, just as lesbian couples learn from their own heterosexual different-sex parents. So that's what's understood by the younger generation. And they're going to carry this knowledge with them as they get older. And so that mainly explains the advance of same-sex marriage, but it also should not be overlooked that now, as jurisdictions one after the other are recognizing them, far from a majority, far from even half of all jurisdictions, but a lot now, that falsifies the hysterical predictions that were made by opponents. When Iowa recognized same-sex marriage, when Connecticut did, when Vermont did recently, when California did in 08 for a period of time, when Massachusetts did back in 2003-2004, the opponents predicted Armageddon. The locust would come. Not a single locust came. Marriage did not collapse. Marriage is doing quite well in Massachusetts, thank you. The main effect is exactly what Darren Spadali and I found in Scandinavia, and that is no seismic shift, no major cultural or social revolution, but simply the dignified recognition of lesbian and gay families that have been chosen and that face all of the problems of straight families. That's what happened, and that was fine, and that persuades people.
Has there been any mistake made or series of mistakes made by advocates of same-sex marriage in some of the efforts that they've made in their campaigns?
Oh, a number of critics can point to moments that they think were counterproductive. I'm fairly agnostic about many of these moments. For example, when Mayor Gavin Newsom issued marriage licenses in San Francisco, he's not authorized to issue marriage licenses that are contrary to state law, as indeed it was at that time. Other mayors have issued marriage licenses. Activists were criticized, for example, in Hawaii back in 1992-93, when the Hawaii Supreme Court issued a decision saying that the exclusion of lesbian gay couples was sex discrimination that had to be justified. And that did provoke a huge backlash. So these folks can be criticized if your criterion is, do most Americans support the position they took? And the answer was no to all of those examples. But here's another way of looking at it. If your criterion is raising the issue on the public agenda, what Hawaii did was very important. What Gavin Newsom did was very important. And that is that they were all asserting that lesbian and gay couples are entitled to the same dignified treatment by the state, not necessarily by religions, but by the state, that different sex couples long have been, and that marriage is an institution which is a big tent. It is a much bigger tent than it was when I was growing up in the South, where different race couples as well as same-sex couples were not only excluded, but were the grounds of violence and persecution on the part of the state and many private individuals. So that's what I would say, is that the efforts to speak the truth, and I do believe the truth is that same-sex unions are good unions. They're problematic in the same ways that different-sex unions are. They are often rewarding. They should be supported by the state for reasons the couple's well-being, the children's well-being, and the community's well-being. I think those are all true statements. And I think it's fine to utter true statements, even when other people don't agree with you. You need to treat their disagreement with respect. If you're certain you're right, as the Hawaii Supreme Court was certain, and Gavin Newsom probably was certain, then you just should just keep on putting out your point of view. I published a book on same-sex marriage in 1996. It was a very unpopular book. It was denounced on the floor of the United States Senate. And I think it was fine. Robert Byrd, the senator from the state where I grew up, West Virginia, read from the book, denounced it, etc. And I think that was fine. He articulated it, I thought, very well and very persuasively to his own audience. But he also contributed to this debate and making this a matter of great public debate in America, which, of course, has only increased since 1996.
And what about the prospect of this patchwork quilt of laws throughout the United States, that we will have some states where it is legal, some states where civil union is on the menu, and other states where there is continued opposition across the board?
That's a very good point. There will be a crazy quilt in the United States for the foreseeable future, exactly as you described it. Now, we've seen this crazy quilt before, so we know how this works. Remember that in the 20th century, most states did not recognize different race marriages until the 1960s, and then all after 1967. So we had this experience already with different race couples. And in some states, those couples' marriages were recognized and treated in a dignified way. Other states would not recognize them at all. Virginia made it a crime to be a different race married couple in the state of Virginia, even if the marriage occurred elsewhere. So we've seen this before, and what this means is that the mobility of the married couples is limited. That if you are a prosperous and economically productive lesbian couple, particularly if you're raising children, then you're going to be very careful what state you establish as your residence if you happen to move for job or other reasons. For example, there are many states, many of them in the South, some of them in the Mormon West, which have expressed great hostility, both prejudice as well as discrimination against same-sex couples. And that will discourage these productive couples from settling in those locations. But there are plenty of states that are welcoming to them, including California, including New York, which does not perform marriages itself, but will recognize same-sex marriages from Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, and these other jurisdictions, Massachusetts. So that's what we're going to see. The crazy quilt, like the different race marriage crazy quilt, is one that will move in a homogenized direction. In other words, states increasingly, every year we'll see more states recognize these unions. And at some point, probably in the next 20 years, all of the states, either by a Supreme Court decision or just by their own efforts, will give some kind of legal recognition to same-sex unions, the way Denmark did in 1989 and Massachusetts in 2003.
Do you see some kind of nexus between same-sex marriage, civil union, these kind of partnerships, and some economic underpinning and some economic benefit to those states that are at the cutting edge?
Well, many scholars have argued, most notably my wonderful colleague Jennifer Brown, a law professor at Quinnipiac. She has argued, and others have supported her, that there will be a big economic first-mover advantage to the early states, because couples from other jurisdictions and maybe even abroad will flock to those states, have nice, big, splashy weddings, pile up hotel bills, catering costs, and whatnot, and bring an infusion into the local economy. And goodness knows, there are few localities in the United States today that could not use an infusion of such money. I do believe that these predictions should be made very modestly. There probably is some economic bump, and there has been a report in New York by a commission indicating that New York would receive a bump if it recognized same-sex marriages. But I think that that's, first of all, not the main reason to recognize them. The main reason to recognize same-sex marriages is that the role of the state is to provide institutions where people can make choices, including choices for committed relationships, including relationships where they want to raise children, with an assurance between the couple and with the children that they want to stay together and provide a stable household. I think that's the main reason. The economic bounce reasons are very interesting to debate, and they occupy economists who otherwise would be up to mischief. So I think it's fine to have those debates and for economists to engage themselves in those kind of calculations rather than making serious policy.
Are you surprised at the momentum that this debate has taken of late?
I'm not at all surprised. I'm surprised that it took so long, to be frank, because I think everything that I said in 1996 in the case for same-sex marriage was true. And I was quite shocked that it was denounced on the floor of the Senate and that more intellectuals, for example, didn't agree with it. Well, I think it sometimes takes a long time for truths to gain roots in a complicated and multicultural society. But I think the truth is now here. And the more experience we'll have, again, the experience is not dramatic. That's the very point of the experience, is that people say this will be a disaster, and then it happens over and over again, and there's never been a disaster, you know, not for marriage, you know, not for anything. Very much like different race marriage. Different race marriage was good for the couples, good for the children, good for America, but it was not any kind of dramatic thing. And same-sex marriage is much like that.
Professor William Eskridge, his book, Gay Marriage, For Better or For Worse, What We've Learned from the Evidence. Bill, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
It's been an utter delight.
Thank you so much.